I know that you have an interest, but to bring it into this particular context, how do you see it?
I was born just after the bomb was dropped.
Right.
Right. So physics and the promise of science, right, was very prominent mid 20th mm-hmm. century. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, well, I have no physics, I only have physics envy. I was able to incorporate some of the language to continuously suggest that kind of scientific basis. Yeah. But that's a really useful question. Yeah.
A long time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
How is this latest book a reflection of stuff you learned from the first one, and how is this latest book taking you to a place that you're not sure where you're going, but you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, good question. In the first book, I started to find some of the work I was doing a little tedious in that kind of sort of lyric kind of mode. And so I was looking at ways to get outside. And I guess that's why I read the Where Authority Lies poem, right? I started to look at email correspondence. I started to look at other ways of incorporating material. So that's really this. I started to think about this in that context when I saw the Boltanski material and started to read more about appropriative kinds of methods and so on, sort of as opposed to the gut-wrenching, right? Looking for ways to infuse the poetry with the world and with work that was out there already. So, and it's taken me to a place, I don't know where it's going next. I've started to do bits and pieces of projects that rely on historical documentation and historical translation and the variances in translation and so on, but, you know, we're still, that's very nebulous.
I'm fascinated by the way, you know, how to put this. There is, in the lyric, you often get the sense of the person in the eye. And here, the poems, there is, the eye is submerged as somebody who was there and affected and reflecting back without mentioning the first person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I find that really, you know, just a sequence of you reading is just this consciousness that there is, well, you know, you are the camera, what have you.
Yes.
But so that's I think it's really unique because there's definitely feeling in there and there's humor, but it's not that the eye is understood but not omnipresent. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I find that a fascinating process of maybe because of each year and as it affected you. I don't know. Were you consciously avoiding the eye throughout this, or did you see it differently? I mean, did you see the whole?
I don't know that I was consciously avoiding the eye. What I was consciously avoiding was introducing. I was staying with the language that was in the headline. Now, I was selecting always, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, that is the shape of the eye, right? I mean, I'm actually interested in trying to program some material that could use some of these poems as structure, right, in terms of tonality and rhythm and so on, but using random words out of the same database or out of a new database of headlines, right, to see how that might produce different sounding work entirely, and whether that would, by virtue of the language that is available, I mean, that's really what I was interested in. I was interested in kind of mapping, sort of drawing out the language that is available to the self, really.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the shaping that took place. over time.
Partly the way you've organized it too.
Yes.
That it's cohesive, right?
Yes.
And it reflects back for me on how we see the world.
Yes.
Year by year, and it's
yes.
very striking that, oh my God, you know, this is all these random pieces shape a story that.
You have to construct, actually.
Yeah.
Right? Which is partly why I've started from the end, and from 2000, because to drop everybody into 1946 right at the beginning, right? I mean, the big context is, you know, the end of the Second World War, but, you know, apart from that, all of the detail is gone. So this is why I start from 2000 and work backwards, because there's a better chance that that listeners can connect to more of the pieces of language. And
it's also the ego of the millennium.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. It is.
So you kind of touched on what I was going to ask you. So when you're doing the timepieces, right, were you concerned with, you mentioned that you wanted the viewer to read the language and get a sense of what their perspective on that particular time was. But obviously you also mentioned that you picked the language. So I'm curious to know what perspective you approached it from, meaning because you picked the language, were you implicitly trying to get the reader to see your perspective of what happened, let's say, in that particular year, or were you concerned with accurately picking, or fairly accurately depicting with language what you perceive to be the reality of that time and conveying that the reader?
Actually, it was a third alternative, but I mean, those are two good identifications. The third alternative was I was concerned at this level primarily with form, right? Because the fragmentation of the language is such that you can't hold the reader with randomness, right? So I was concerned with building rhythm, building all kinds of assonances, all of those kinds of formal aspects. So I was I was less concerned with the words I was selecting as content than I was as form. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah, and it appeared to me like I personally got a pretty good sense of what happened at that particular time,
Interesting.
It's fairly structured, but the language is random, so it was
right.
Interesting.
Yeah, and these are all, I don't know if I said this at the beginning, they're all February 1st, so really it is what's happening in the Canadian winter of each year and how it connects to the rest of the world, right? Which was kind of interesting because, you know, when I started to get down to really local newspapers, and particularly when I was originally from Alberta, all they were reporting on was curling. It was really boring.
Well, that's a wonderful word.
It is a wonderful word. Bonspiel is good.
Yeah. One of the things that I also loved about it was that there was so much movement in the poem.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like the rhythms of the language and the fragments and the connection of fragments was actually like scanning yourself.
Yes. Oh, interesting. I hadn't thought about the kind of this, yeah.
The way
okay.
that you walk by a newsstand or walk
yes.
by one of those LED kind of news
mm-hmm.
flash things and you got little fragments.
Right. And that was sort of, that was a kind of image that I had initially and why I went to headlines,
mm-hmm.
right? As opposed to, because it was suggested to me, various people I sort of, you know, brains I was picking at the time was suggesting, like, just doing random content from articles, right, under the headlines. And that somehow seemed inappropriate because I wanted a kind of painting of the public language.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I'm interested, very, very interested in that piece you read about your work up north, and especially interested in the way that it ends with the scoop. Because it makes you then suddenly reread back through it and go, oh my God. Right? So it's, but as an American, unless I had come up here, I would not have known what that was
mm-hmm.
with you know, children being scooped up out of their homes. So I'm sort of puzzling over it. I'm trying to think.